Welcome, one and all, throughout time and space to an all-new episode of Weeaboos on the Weekends.
A podcast where we break down the anime news highlights of the week and give a retrospective look at anime that premiered 10 years ago.
Today's episode, we'll be covering our top 10 anime from 2022 with a returning special guest, Alonzo.
My name is Jay Johnson. I'm a part-time weeb and full-time daigaku kansara.
My name is Sam Martinez, part-time weeb, full-time automail mechanic.
All right, Sam, so we have this list to do today for this episode, as well as our previous episode where we did the best anime from 10 years ago. But I wanted to get your opinion before we get to our special guest about how was your anime habit addiction this year? Because it occurs to me that I probably watched over 450 episodes of anime this year, and I usually top out around 300. But, you know, I was catching up on One Piece with the Wano arc, as well as just like watching animes to their full completion that I forgot from last year. But yeah, how was your anime addiction this year?
Oh my goodness. I don't know if it was that large an amount, but then again, like the hours and stuff do get away from me, because there were some animes that I had ended up finishing that I didn't realize that I would finish. I was probably more consistent in the beginning of the year just because of how my schedule was. Later on in the year, or at least like in the last few months, I wasn't as consistent as I would have liked, but that's probably the best way that I can describe it. It's like I started out the year strong and I was sort of meh as the year waned, but it was still a pretty good year. From the anime that I've seen, and I'm really excited to see how our lists differ or are very similar to each other.
Right, because we can have our own individual way of how we assemble our list, because I don't have any season twos on my list. You know, it's a best list of new anime for this year, because this kind of year, 2022, was kind of a big year for returning anime, like Devil Was a Part-Timer, Tiger and Bunny, Overlord, as well as some Gundam Return this year. Bleach. Yeah, I guess if you want to talk about something that returned this year, sure, Bleach Return. As well as we got a new adaptation of Ruby, which was kind of out of left field by Studio Shaft. So very interesting that Ruby kind of had a resurgence this year. But getting to our special guest, returning special guest from his episode on Future Diary, Alonzo, I wanted to ask you, as our standard set piece for our best of the year anime list, how do you feel that this year held up to last year?
So I gotta say, first off, thanks again for having me back on. But yeah, this year felt a little weird for me, because there were phenomenal anime that came out, but there just weren't a lot of things that like kept my attention like all the way through. Like, this is probably like the year that I've watched the least amount of anime. But like the stuff that I watched, I consumed, right? Like it took, you'll see based off of my like number one pick, like how that like came about. But like last year was just, there was just so much that was really, really good. This year, I feel as though there wasn't like that number of things that were really, really good, but the things that are really, really good are like beyond that, right? Like I wouldn't say that they're necessarily like that much better, but like there's some anime that came out this year that literally made me spend 50 hours delving into a different genre, work entirely, right? Because of how good the storytelling and everything about it was, you know. And there was nothing last year that made me do anything remotely close. So,
all right, cool. Wow. That's good to hear. Well, yeah, because, you know, you can always have up and down with waves. But I also want to get your opinion, because I know you're a man of culture, is that did you notice a high volume of horny on main anime this year? Because the ones that come to mind immediately was Engage Kiss, which was a A1 Pictures anime. And basically, there is a extended scene, as well as occurring multiple times, of the main character putting neurotoxin as lube on his condom and paralyzing an assassin that he has physical relationships with. But that's just one example. But any horny on main anime this year?
I mean, okay, so you have Engage. I didn't watch Engage Kiss, and this next one I'm about to mention, I haven't watched it, but I've been wanting to, I just haven't gotten around to it. Friggin' Call of the Night. I mean, Dress Up Darling's basically horny on main. Chainsaw Man is horny on main, like, yeah. Literally. No, there's definitely been like a significant, well, I'm gonna say significant, I think just a lot more of the popular anime or just anime in general being are more okay with being horny on main, aside from just being like fan service, right? It's more about like it's plot related now, which is weird, right? Because even last year we had Mushoku Tensei, which was horny on main, but it was plot related, and it was weird, but it was like, this is kind of okay, I guess, because like we kind of relate to the character, but then you're also like, but you're a 30-year-old dude in a kid's body, and this is strange. It made you question a lot of things, right? And I think this year it's less questioning, it's just more of like, I guess we're more okay with being horny.
Yeah, anime has kind of matured, and even Sam mentioning Bastard. Did you actually finish Bastard? Because I know you got a couple episodes in, but did you actually finish Bastard, Sam?
I finished the first half, and I know that the second half was released on Netflix later on in the year, but I was tired from the story after watching the first half. It's like, okay, this is what's happening. And like with some of the scenes, there was a scene where one of the main characters was having to suck out blood so that one character couldn't get poisoned, and it was done in a very risque manner. And it's like, okay, it's like I knew that this was going to be quote unquote fun, but it's like this is borderline other stuff. So it's like I don't need to keep watching this. So that was I had finished halfway through. I didn't finish it when the rest of it was released on Netflix.
All right, that's completely fair. So yeah, I noticed the horniness of this year, as well as many sports animes as I watched. I probably watched 5 sports animes, from like Love All Play to Salaman's Club to Birdie Wing, which was a very interesting golf anime by Studio MAPPA this year. But other highlights of the year before we get into our top 10 list is that we had a new One Piece movie this year, Red. We had a new Super Ball. Wait, it's not Super Ball. It's Dragon Ball Super movie this year. As well as we talked about Penguin Drum coming back and recycled, which is a compilation film of the episodes of Penguin Drum. As well as the celebration of the 50th anniversary of Kamen Rider. Right, Sam?
Yes.
50th? Yeah, 50.
Yes.
With, is it Futo Pai or Futo
Pi? Yeah. It's Futo Pai or Futo Tente.
Yeah, I guess we know what kind of, what something on Sam's list. But yeah, let's get into our top 10 individuals lists. So, as always with our top 10 lists, we have a game called Weebskit Ball, where we have basically, we trade animes back and forth, but we'll go top 5 and bottom 5 first. So with our rulings of yeet, where if it's on someone's list, but it's on someone's list higher up on the list, you say yeet. Bench means it's on someone's list, but it's not on another person's list. And Kobe means it's in the same spot. So starting off with Alonzo, as he has the letter A, and then going to me, and then Sam, is the order of operation. But that is how Weebskit Ball works. So Alonzo, starting off with our special guest, what is your 10 through 6?
So my 10 through 6 are The Yakuza's Guide to Babysitting by Studio Feel and Gaina. It was credited to both. Available on Crunchyroll. Came out in the summer of 2022. Number 9, and don't hate me for this one. Oh, actually, do you guys want to go one by one, or do you want to go...
Yeah, let's go one by one. Sorry, I should have explained that a little bit better. Yeah. But yeah, one by one, because I want to hear like a good like summary of what you think is great about it, because I actually benched this last minute because I loved it. I watched all episodes, but I benched it because I had too much comedy on my list, so it's a bench for me.
I mean, like, honestly, you hit it on like right around the head. Like, it's comedic, it's fun, it's cute. Like, it, I if you remember, if you've ever watched Sweetness and Lightning, it has that same kind of feel to it where it's just very wholesome, but added on to the comedy of having a Yakuza take care of a small child while protecting that child from the, like, darkness that is the Yakuza world, right? What about you, Sam? Is this a bench for you?
Yes, this would sadly be a bench for me. I know Jay had mentioned it, and from the way he talked about it, it was similar to that other anime where it was another sort of funny parent thing where the kid was an Esper.
Hinamatsuri, same studio.
So I was told like it was somewhat in the same vein, and I've been wanting to check those two out, but I haven't made the time to do so.
All right, cool. Alonzo, you're number 9, please.
Number 9. Again, don't hate me for this one. It's only as low as it is because I don't know the source material, and it hasn't finished airing yet, but I know it's probably going to be good. But that's the only reason it's so low. Mob Psycho 100 by Studio Bones. Currently still airing. Available on Crunchyroll and Hulu.
Hey, awesome. Yeah, that's currently season 3 with the big broccoli tree as the kind of center of the story, but that's a bench for me.
That's also a bench for me as well. I've been watching that one a little bit loosely. I'm a little behind. I was told that one of the characters that was in season 1 that's sort of been palling around is up to shenanigans again regarding the broccoli, and I'm interested to see what's happening there.
Yeah, so what's up with this season? Like, it's only 4 episodes in, but it already made your top 10 list?
Yeah, so again, it goes back to, like, I haven't seen that much anime this year, but it was far better than the rest of the stuff I've watched, because no offense to Bleach. I mean, it's good, it's Bleach, but it's Bleach, you know? Like, it's good for turning your brain off and being, ooh, big sword, slashy, you know? But it, I don't know, there's something about storytelling in Mob Psycho that I really like. And the way that, like, characters are portrayed, that, like, it hits up there for my top 10 for this year. So far, the last 2 seasons have always had a really big, impactful, like, ending to where you're just like, I can't believe they managed to animate this the way that they did, right? So I'm just assuming that that's going to be coming down the road. But again, because it hasn't finished airing, and there's a chance that it pulls, you know, any number of anime who have dropped the ball towards the end. Like, that's why it's number 9. It's not higher up. I'm hopefully optimistic, cautiously optimistic, and why it's on my top 10, but not, like, you know, so far up.
All right, cool, fair. So you're number 8.
It is Sabekui Bisco. Sure, yeah, no. Studio Oz, Winter 2022. This one surprised me. Available on Amazon Prime, Crunchyroll, Funimation, and the Microsoft Store.
It's on the Microsoft Store?
Yeah. Apparently you can... I'm guessing rent it, download it, stream it, I don't know, off of the Microsoft Store, which is surprising.
I jumped the gun on it. Sorry. I was excited.
No, you're good.
It made someone's list. But yeah, it's a yeet for me. But Sam?
That it's a yeet for me as well.
Nice. Okay, sweet. Then I guess we'll just come back to it when we get to y'all's part on the list, right?
All right. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, all right, cool.
So you're number 7.
I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be on either of y'all's list, but... Licorice Recoil by A1 Pictures, summer 2022, only available on Crunchyroll.
That's a yeet for me.
Oh shit, okay.
I have seen it, I have not had a chance to watch it yet, so that's a bench for me.
Got it, okay. So we'll come back. Okay, we'll come back to Licorice, okay.
Alright, and your bottom, or your top of your bottom 5, your number 6?
It's gonna be Ya Boy Kong Ming by PA Works, spring 2022, only available on HiDive.
Alright, that is a bench for me.
That is a bench for me as well.
Ya Boy Kong Ming, to summarize it, is imagine that, I guess this is technically a reverse isekai, where a historical figure has been transported to the present and is using his like tactical military knowledge to fight the social media and beat it through military tactics, right? And he becomes the manager for a up and coming artist that he like listened to by chance when he had died in his time, reincarnated in our time, like fully grown and everything, walks into a club, hears her singing, isn't signed, isn't very big, uses his tactics to grow her fandom in an amazing way. Also, check out the opening. It's amazing. Just, that's all I'm going to say. the music in the show is great. The comedy in the show is great. And just the animation is actually surprisingly good for being a music anime, if that makes any sense. So highly recommend it. But that's my piece on that.
I agree with you there. I saw the first episode and like I read the synopsis before watching it. And I'm like, like on paper it shouldn't work, but then they made it work in practice, and I'm like, huh, this is actually kind of novel. I haven't been able to keep going with it, but from the first, I think I saw the first two episodes. They did pretty well with the premise, and I like your synopsis. Your synopsis, you do it a lot better justice than where I first read it from.
Yeah, because this is on my side list. I just had a stipulation on my list that I can't put anything that I haven't finished watching, and I got mostly way through it. It's just like, it's so endearing to see this like up and coming musician and or vocal artist, and like the rap battles are like really. I do want to hear it in the dub because, you know, listening to Japanese rap and Japanese, of course, you kind of lose some of that musicality or the artistry of it. So I want to see if it does have a decent dub in the future. But yeah, it's something that taps into that Carol on Tuesday from last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like this.
I think it was 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this music of expertise that they're showing inside of an anime. Like, oh, I guess I don't know much about music to appreciate it fully, but. Yeah, it's a very interesting story. So, moving on to my top 10 list, my bottom five. So, in the 10th spot, I have crossed out here Yakuza Guide to Babysitting. So, instead, I have for my number 10, Uncle from Another World. This is 13 episodes available on Netflix and done by... This is the most ridiculous studio name I've ever seen. It's like Altalepondori. And it's their second anime, so Uncle from Another World.
Oh, man, that is a bench for me, even though I'm all caught up on the Netflix released over here in the States.
That is a bench for me as well. It is something I've been wanting to watch, but just haven't had a chance to. Again, it just goes to my, like, there's a bunch of stuff, there's a lot of stuff there, but there hasn't been a lot that just, like, is, like, pulling me to watch it. This is one of those things. It looks really good. I want to watch it. I just haven't had time.
Yeah, it is very in the weeds with nerd culture around anime, video games, like living online, just like the progression of like, I think the time period is like 30 years, how the world has changed. And it's very cringy in moments because it gives you this perspective or this subversion of the isekai genre where it's kind of like a reverse isekai as well in the same way as your boy Koming was, is that dude goes to a fantasy world and basically comes back with magical powers. And you kind of see the magical world, the fantasy world through his perspective. And you're like, and you're watching it as the audience member, seeing it through like his nephew's eyes as well. It's like, wow, uncle, you're embarrassing. And it's like, yeah, the hero of the world. And, you know, it's kind of like the Konosuba treatment. It's like bumbling idiots finding their ways to success. But also it's like, wow, this is how someone would really act if they got isekai. And it's like the realness to it is what really makes this cringy. If you're ever watching TikTok videos or YouTube and you see like embarrassing fails, that's just the whole anime. But then throwing magic sometimes, making a YouTube career off of being a magical being. And it's like, just treats like a lot of these real world components in an isekai story as if they're actually real and what would the consequence be. So I highly recommend it. So, I hope I'm not a pariah for putting it so low on the list, but my number 9 is Spy Family.
Oh, that's a yeet from me. What about you, Alonzo?
Yeah, I know. Okay.
No, like, I fully get it.
It's still ongoing, so I'm going to wait until, like, the 24. They already declared that it's going to be 24 episodes, so we're in the second floors right now. But, yeah, we'll talk about that later. But my number 8 is a sports anime called Aoashi. This is by Production IG, the same studio responsible for Haikyuu. It's 24 episodes. And available on Crunchyroll.
Oh man, that is a bench for me. I've been trying to watch it. I haven't made time to do it because you had mentioned it before. I partook in the other soccer anime. So that's it for me. What about you, Alonzo?
It's unfortunately a bench for me as well.
Alright, cool. This is going to be an interesting list. Alright, so yeah, Aoashi, it does file into the same sports hype as Haikyuu, I would you know estimate, but it's really hard to make soccer look interesting without giving people superpowers. So that's kind of the Blue Lock aesthetic. Blue Lock is premiered this season, but they are taking a very hard approach to like the hobby shop talk of it, like talking about the different skills as well as the egotism and mentality of training a superstar. But with Aoashi, it feels very much more grounded. There are like moments where they do get into like visual trickery of how the sports, players get into the zone. Same thing how they did with,
With Kuroko no Basket? Oh, my apologies.
Oh no, it's not Dragon Ball Z basketball like Kuroko no Basket, but it does side more on the Haikyuu side or Major Second with baseball. It does take a realistic approach. It's just a little bit more grounded. And what really makes Aoashi like really worth suggesting is that all of their personalities derive from some kind of trauma. It's that they're using sports as an outlet. And I think it's like the kind of Coach Carter, if anyone knows the movie Coach Carter, it's like you're playing basketball to escape a bad situation or to repress your anger, or, you know, you're trying to excel, but like your drive is like detrimental to itself. So like a lot of fun characters, a lot of like emotional baggage to everybody, and makes everyone feel like a main character, that they have to share part of the team. So it's really good sports stuff. So that's my one sports slot for this year. So my number 7 is what Alonzo mentioned earlier, Sai Buki Bisco.
That is a Kobe for me.
Yeah, so we're basically all around in the same spot. It's 8 for Alonzo and 7 for both me and Sam. But yeah, as you said earlier, that is by Nas, who did It Invaded 2 years ago. Wow, I'm losing track, but I really love Nas for what they do with It Invaded, so I was like, oh yeah. And the thing that really sells Bisco for me is that it has these vibes of Nausicaa of the Valley. It's like really wild monster designs, as well as this commentary about war and corruption and the detrimental effects that we have on the planet. So it's like all around this wild sci-fi adventure, and I like the buddy road comedy, or not road, well, it's a road comedy something, but I like the dynamic or the contrast between the two main leads, which is Bisco and Mio, being a doctor and an art.
Panda Sensei.
Panda. But yeah, for sure, it's very interesting that it was overlooked this year because it had come out in the springtime, I believe, and it was going against a lot of heavy hitters because, like, Attack on Titan had wrapped up, Ranking of Kings had wrapped up, and Case Study of Vanitas had wrapped up, so I don't think a lot of attention was shown to it, but it's a really good, fun time. But, Sam, it's on your Kobe for you as well, so what's up with this as well?
I would say it's a little bit like yours with where it is in my list. The story is a little bit solid. It's fun. I would say, because the way that I had organized my list a little bit, it was more or less for like how accessible it is to new viewers. And with Sabikui no Bisco, it's a good short anime for somebody who wants to get into anime. And it's a nice story, as you said. Definitely has a lot of action, and the characters are definitely fun to deal with. It's, I would say, it has a very much like, I want to say desert punk, but I haven't seen too much of it. I guess like desert punk, probably like aesthetic wise a little bit because of the desert, but I'm trying to think of like another anime where they go from town to town. So maybe like Trigon. So a little bit like a short, light version of Trigon almost. But yeah, that's it's a good solid anime, and like you said, it's definitely worth a watch, even though it was sort of like swept away or forgotten earlier this year.
My number six, I guess I'm going to hear bench from you guys, because I think I'm the only one that watched this, because it's wildly underrated as well. But Ahari-san is Indescribable. This is by Felix Film, who did Other Side Picnic, so it's not a good track record, but this is a banger, and it's 12 episodes available on Crunchyroll.
That is a bench for me. What about you, Alonzo?
This was my other comedy, so I was like, I can have like three comedies on here. But yeah, it is a very endearing comedy in the same vein as like Nichi Joe and Daily Life of High School Boys, where it takes comedic vignettes between these two very awkward individuals. I would say, like, if you want to say the dynamic between Komi-san and Tadano from Komi-san is, what's that? What's the second part of Komi-san? Can't communicate. Yeah, kind of take their dynamic, but they're both kind of introverts, and the comedy around these two like leads into a lot of the trends of like, they do like fidget spinners, they do like, they look to do like Tide Pods.
Oh, that's this anime. You told me about that. Yeah.
Yeah, this is like a very modern take on anime. Same thing with like Uncle from Another World. So it's very endearing, very cutesy moe. They get into like a little, they tap into a little bit of the romantic side of their relationship, but not too much to distract you from like the central point of the show is comedy and like cute story of two introverts becoming friends. So I was like, okay, I can buy that. And it's funny. So. That is my bottom five. So, Sam, on to you. What is your number 10?
So, my number 10, it was, my number 10 is Executioner and Her Way of Life.
All right, that's a bench for me.
Bench as well.
Okay. So, I figured it would be a little bit like that. It was, with this one, it was between this one or Uncle from Another World. Essentially, it's my isekai pick. And with this anime, it was done by Studio JC staff, same people that did Toradora, One Punch Man. It is streaming on HIDIVE. It came out of spring this year? Yeah, came out spring this year. And the synopsis is essentially with this anime, this world is known to have heroes that are summoned there or people that are isekai'd there. And you follow a group of people that essentially assassinate these people, the people who are summoned, because if the people are in their world for too long, their powers become uncontrollable and they become natural disasters. So I essentially chose this because the premise was very interesting. You see an isekai story from the native people's perspective, and there is a mystery box behind the main antagonist's backstory as well. Again, the concept was very interesting, and the way that they were going to go about it, or the way that they went about it, was entertaining from what I have seen.
All right, cool. Yeah, because it is like very shocking in the first episode. You think you're following the main character, who just stumbles upon a, you know, helpless looking girl. And the shock at the end of the first episode, you know, not to ruin too much of it, but the main character you think is the main character gets stabbed in the head. So it's like, okay, you know. So yeah, it's one of the honorable mentions I have. I did enjoy, like, I only got halfway through it. So again, I don't put anything that I didn't complete on my list. But yeah, it's a really good choice, Sam. All right, your number nine.
My number nine, I think it might be a bench for you guys as well, but Tokyo 24th Ward.
That is a bench.
That is also a bench. Is that, I think I'm confusing it with Tokyo Sinks. Never mind.
Oh, Tokyo 9. It's Tokyo 9, the Danganronpa kind of baseball anime?
No. I was Tokyo Sinks is what I thought he was referring to.
Okay, gotcha. No.
Yeah, so what's this about, Sam?
This is neither Tribe Nine nor Tokyo Sinks. So with this anime was done by Cloverworks. It's also streaming on Crunchyroll and Funimation, and this came out of winter this year, I believe, earlier this year. And with Tokyo 24th Ward, we basically follow these three childhood friends. They get together in high school or after high school for a funeral for a fourth mutual friend of theirs, and they end up getting a call from their dead friend. And as they answer, you see the scene where their brains get hijacked and they are given a sort of a glimpse of the future where they're sort of given a trolley-esque problem. The problem being where it's like trolley is on a train, and if it keeps going, it's going to kill one person. If you switch the tracks, you may kill like several hundred other people, things of that nature. Like, what do you do? And essentially, these three people are given extraordinary abilities to overcome a real world situation. And it's just very interesting with the way that these three people have. One of them is the head of a local gang. The other one works closely with the police department. And the other one is just super athletic because he wanted to be a vigilante. And just seeing them interact with each other, it's just done very, very well. And despite their interpersonal conflicts, whenever they get the call, because the call happens several times throughout the show, they do their best to put aside their differences and to try to find an outcome that is best for everybody so that no lives are lost. And it's a very interesting concept, and with the way that they animate everything, it's just very smooth and very clean. I hadn't had a chance to finish it, but from what I've seen, the story is pretty good, and where they're taking the characters seems to be a pretty decent direction as well.
So we're going to get a lot of interesting combinations when we combine our final list, but
yeah.
Getting to your number eight, Sam.
So my number eight is Futo P.I. or Futo Tente. And I'm thinking this is going to be a bench for you guys.
But it is a bench for me.
It is.
So the studio for this one is Studio Kai. They're also known for doing Seven Seeds and Skeleton Knight in Another World. And you can see this streaming on Crunchyroll, and it came out earlier this year in the summer. And we've talked about this before. This is essentially the quote-unquote fan fiction sequel to the Kamen Rider franchise, Kamen Rider W. And it is, as what you said earlier, Jay, the 50th anniversary celebration for the Kamen Rider series franchise as a whole. The reason why I put it on the list is because, again, as I said before, it's in terms of accessibility for people who don't really know anime. And with this one, you can watch it and not really know much about Kamen Rider W. It's sort of its weakness and its strength, mainly because you can go in blind, you not really know what the story is about, and it organically gives you, you know, the background story for everything. So you don't have to know necessarily like the ins and outs of what happened in the show. You can watch this one, learn along the way. It's not going to be jarring. It's not like there's going to be a big exposition dump or anything else like that. But I would say that's also a little bit of its downside. Why it's a little bit lower on the list is because there was a lot of growth that the characters had during the Kamen Rider series. And there are times where I'm watching it, it's like, but they already went through this. Why are they going through this again? You know, that sort of thing. But it does the series very well. It does the series justice. You get to hear a lot of the old school theme songs in the show, and the animation, oh my goodness, it's great. It's amazing. And so, like, all the fight scenes that you see, it's nothing corny. It's very, very well done, and that's why it's on my spot where it is.
All right, cool. Nice. Yeah, didn't even check out one episode, so that's good. Tis here. So we know your number 7, which is Bisco. So we're going to ask to your top, or your top of your bottom 5 is your number 6.
The top of my lower half is my dress up doll.
Well, it's a yeet.
It's a yeet for me.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
But, yeah, cool. Okay, so we can save that for later because that's our... Yeah, because I think me and... But anyways, yeah, so that's our bottom 5. So, interesting. Okay, so we have a couple of commonalities, so we'll see which gets higher up on our list. But now we're going to switch to our top 5, which is the bulk of our discussion, talking about how did it... turn out, how did it progress, just going a little bit more detail into the characters, animations, and just overall what we love about it. But these are the ones that we feel the strongest about. So Alonzo, back to you to start us off. What is your number 5?
My number 5 is Spy Family.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Okay. Yeah, it's not too, it's not too terribly, because you had it as your number... No. I had it higher on my list, but this is your first time appearing. Sorry. Okay, yeah. So number 5, so it breaks the boundary of top 5. So what about it did you love?
Did Sam have it in his bottom 5? No, right?
No. I it's a yeet for me.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So okay.
Oh, my right, bad.
So let me clarify. The only reason that it's as low as it is is because everything else on my list is animated better, which is something to say considering how well animated this show actually is, right? And it's also just like slice of life anime are very common, but it's also not finished. They could drop the ball with like pacing in terms of like like what they're gonna do with like how much of the story they're gonna cover with like these remainder. I think like 9 episodes are left. I think for this core, so that's why it's so low. I've read the manga. I know what's gonna be happening. I just don't want them to mess up the pace on their way forward.
You don't want them to fumble the bag.
Yeah, so that's my bit, but if it's a yeet for both y'all, we can continue talking about...
Oh, no, it's a punch for Jay. He has a lower on his list.
Oh, okay, sorry. I got it mixed up between two. My bad.
Yeah, but, I mean, we could talk more about it now. So, Sam, where is it on your list?
Where is it on my list?
Yeah.
You guys don't want to find out later?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying we can come back. We can discuss once we hit the highest point for anyone.
All right, cool. Okay, then we'll come back to your higher up on your list, Spy Family. But yeah, it's interesting here that you read the manga, because I'm a anime only, so I want to hear how you feel like it did progress for the first core, at least, so on pacing-wise. So my number 5 is I'm Quitting Heroing.
Ooh, that's a bench. I haven't heard of that.
Okay, cool. Perfect. Yeah, so this is... Oh, so bench for both of you?
Yeah, sorry. All
right, cool. No, it's good, good. So it's coming out of an odd studio that is EMT Squared, which did Master of Ragnarok, which is one of those stupid isekai harem animes that came out a few years ago. But it's available on High Dive for 12 episodes, and I think I've given this enough praise over the year. But it is such a wild story that it's really hard to talk about what's good about it, because it's in the subversion of how the narrative closes that really makes it extraordinary. And just as a writer, you know, I'm just like, I was just sitting in amazement how the twist of the series turns out. So it's something I really can't talk about too deeply, but what really sells me about, or what can I say that sells the series the most, is that there's this undercurrent of, I guess, oddity, or there's this undercurrent of suspicion. It's not like a mystery box like in a thriller or a mystery story, but it's like you can tell something is wrong by the way they're telling the story. So you're obviously keyed into something that's sinister kind of in the background, but it's so light and fluffy. And it's like, oh, there's a cat girl who transforms into different beasts. And there's a big bulky sword guy that basically forms around the hero of the world, where the world has become at peace with itself, or the demon army has been defeated. So it's kind of the post, the epilogue of most isekai stories. It's not about the hero defeating the demon army. It's about what does the hero do after the world's at peace. And it's very, like, not retrospective. It's very introspective of, like, what is the job of a hero after the world has won. And it's very kind of depressing in the way that, oh, after heroes win, they lose purpose in their life. There's no redemption for them. Their story ends. So what do? They have to open a new chapter. And in the instance of this story, the hero becomes a bad guy. It's like, oh, interesting.
I want problems always.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Oh my gosh, that is actually a perfect, yeah, okay, that should be the tagline of the show, because the hero is like, oh, I just defeated the Demon King. Okay, Demon King, this is how you could have won. Let me help you do it better the next time. And it does play it up for comedy, but in the very back of the story, you're like, okay, why is he doing this? You get all these colorful cast members of, like, different demons and how the magic system in the world works, and what is the, like, political, like, it feels in the vein of, what was that anime that we were watching together about Hiro that was doing, like, all the micromanaging of his kingdom?
Oh, the realistic Hiro?
Yeah, the realistic Hiro, yeah. It kind of takes that approach of, like, rebuilding a demonic army. So how does the training go? How does the lines of supply work? How does negotiation works now that they're a defeated country or a defeated army? So there's a lot to love about it. But again, what really sells it is the end. So, you know, that's always hard to tell people, like, oh, yeah, stick through it till the end. But it's seriously worth it. So I highly recommend it in my top five. But that's that for two benches. So, Sam, what about your number five?
My number five, this is probably a punt for some of you, or not a punt, but a yeet for some of you guys, is Chainsaw Man.
That's a yeet for me.
That's a bench for me.
Okay, so we can save on that. We can save on that.
All right, Alonzo, back to you. Your number four.
My number four is my Dress Up Darling.
That okay. Is a Kobe. That's a Kobe for me.
Hey.
Hey. Whoa. Okay. You guys were sharing the brain cell on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Look, okay. So, Jay, do you want to take it away?
Yes, because, you know, a lot of the discussion that came out with Dress Up Darling is like, is Mirren best girl? It is so odd that what makes her such a good character makes her just feel so real. It doesn't feel like you're watching a animated property. It's just like, it's hard to tackle what makes Dress Up Darling so good. So it's done by Cloverworks, who did Horimiya. So, you know, they already have the credentials to animate a good romantic, you know, high school romance story. But it's both of the leads. It's like all the love was given to Mirren, but Gojo as a co-lead is such a, I don't want to say hard-boiled, but he's so hard-coded into what a lot of, you know, maybe nerds or outcasts or just people that have been dejected in their life kind of attached to, not going into like the incel kind of direction, you know, just using some modern terminology, just someone that is so passionate about something that they isolate themselves inside that thing because of fear of being rejected and not having anyone around them to support them. Even though Gojo is in the business of doll making like his grandfather, it is still a family business. It's not something that branches out into his personal life. It's like very much his private life. And with the 12 episodes, they do justice to the pacing of hyping things up from costume to costume, introducing new characters, introducing new dynamics to the co-leads, as well as, you know, falling into the, not the trap of a relationship, but just how easy it is to fall in love with someone that is passionate about something, and especially when it overlaps with your own passion. So the dynamic of the two leads is just on point, because you see that this is how people fall in love. It doesn't feel forced at all. Just like, oh, it just happens. And it comes from an earnest, genuine place. And Cloverworks, I think you mentioned earlier, Alonzo, is like, it does do a lot of good animations, somewhat as Spy Family does, because that's Studio Wit and Cloverworks. So the animation is on point as like modern techniques are used, but it's like not as flashy or anime style, I guess, to talk about it. But same thing like with Dress Up Darling, it's like kind of plain and flat and like, glossy and like all these other, smoothing effects on it that you're like, oh, this is a modern anime using modern techniques. But it is just an overround, good, wholesome soul that wraps up pretty well and leads into a hopefully another season, because the manga is still, or did the manga wrap up recently, or what am I thinking?
I think it's still going. I think you might be thinking of Kaguya.
Kaguya just wrapped up last week or something, but but yeah,
it's saw so many people crying.
And that movie is coming out very soon as well. But anyways, Dress Up Darling.
Just real quick, I wanted to say like it. There is news that Dress Up Darling is coming back for season two.
Oh, good, perfect. Yeah, because like there is so much to tackle, because they don't tap into like the convention scene, which they can do easily. They don't talk into like too much of the hobby talk of how Gojo makes dresses, and like they touch on it enough to keep you interested and like saying, oh, I'm learning something about it. But it is just, sorry, it's just, it's so good. I want to watch, I really want to watch it in the dub, because I've kind of seen some of the Marin lines. But yeah, it's an anime that I would come back for the dub. But how about you, Alonzo? Why is it your number four as well?
So a lot of what you said, right? It's a lot about the relationship between the two characters, how like not forced it felt. It felt just so, like you said, you know, natural. Like they are both passionate about something. It kind of happens to overlap, and they kind of accidentally fall for each other. Like they don't mean to. It's just that like they spend enough time together. Like they actually enjoy each other's company. They're supportive of each other.
In love.
Yeah, like and it's just like at no point do you think like, it's like, why are you together? It's like, no, this makes perfect sense. And not even from like a utilitarian standpoint of like, oh, well, they're just using, no, like they just genuinely support each other's like everything without realizing it, right? I think one of the things that I really liked about the show was you touched a little bit on about this, like how like you can sense their passion because of how detailed or how much detail like the show goes into, like, well, this is why we need to make this change on this dress. Oh, I didn't think about doing this fix for you. I'll make sure to make it better next time. Like, yes, this was closer to like the material we wanted, but it's not breathable, so it doesn't make sense to make for your cosplay that you're gonna be wearing all day. Like these little intricacies just put like the cherry on top of like why I just kept wanting to watch more.
I would say, like, just to jump off of that point, Alonzo, because for that big convention that she did, he wanted to make the dress as accurate as possible. So he went and he got, like, the super thick fabric. And then, like, when he's, you know, did the actual practice, just going on to what you were saying, like, that's when he realized, it's like, oh, snap. Even though I went super authentic, it's not very breathable. And she was out there in the sun all day, right? So, like, it's seeing him grow in his craft. Like, he already knows how to seam and how to do makeup and stuff like that. But now he's exercising his skills and he's putting them in other ways, sort of making his craft grow, putting him in different situations. And so that's very, very entertaining to see. I would say, like, as for me, the reason why it was a little bit lower on my list, because the animation is great, the way that they do everything. I would say it's, and I definitely love the hobby talk and the character interactions, but I would say the reason why it's a little bit lower on my list is mainly because of the story. Anything in my top five, it's there because the story is just more intriguing to me and how the characters interact within that story as well. So that's like the only thing that is that would be a negative for me. But then again, it's, you know, it's more or less like a slice of life romance story that's hyper focused on a hobby, and so that it may just be like the right thing for somebody else in that.
Gotcha, that's fair. And 6 is not too terribly low from our 4 placement. So before we move on to this, before we move on to your number 4, Sam, I wanted to just ask about your favorite moments of Dress Up Darling, because mine is probably a very degenerate moment, but I was like, this is a very attention to detail thing that they did, and I don't know why they did it, but it sold me on the series as a whole, is that there is a, near the end of the 12 episode run, there is a moment where Gojo and Marin are in a love hotel, they're in a love hotel, and they're doing like positioning work for the best camera shot, and again, it's a part of the side detail hobby shop of it is photography, because they get introduced to characters that are professional cosplayers, or you know, kind of grow their own brand into like expertise in buying expensive cameras and how much cosplay actually costs you in the long run. And there's a moment that they show Gojo getting a boner, I guess I'm going to be a little crass about it, and I was like, that is a level of horniness, talking about the year of horniness that it was this year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that is such a weird character moment, because again, that speaks to his character, is that he gets so obsessed into the work that he's doing that it overrides the sexual or the monkey attraction brain. The of being around this supermodel girl who also does magazine covers as well as a high school student. So it's like, yes, he's nervous because he's a nervous person, and that he doesn't want to, you know, lower her social standings by being around her. And that's where his nervousness and anxiety comes from. It's not that she's a female that he's nervous around. It's that he has never, you know, modeled or like measured someone naked, or all these like small intricate things that you talked about, Alonzo, but that's the moment that really sold me about, if they're paying that much attention to his character and how much it is to overlook such a simplistic thing of being in a love hotel with a very beautiful supermodel and then showing the reaction.
Like, that scene entirely was just like, he was nervous. He was like, oh, should we even be here? This looks weird. Yeah. And then like the moment he started working, he forgot about that entirely, to the point where like in that situation, she was straddling him because they needed a better shot for the picture, right? And he fully forgot. And the instant he realized where he was like, oh shit. And he had a very real moment, okay? Of just like two people who are like kind of into each other, but like don't really realize it. And one person gets a little too happy and you're just like, freak out, you know, like that moment, like, cause that can go in one of two ways. Either one person freaks out and it's like, I gotta go, and they just leave, or like, you know, you get a little happier. But like, and then obviously, like, because it's a romance anime, that's not gonna happen anytime soon. Only one's ever done that, Horimiya, so far, like this early, in its run, but like they went with the comedic like response for it, and both parties felt okay afterwards. It didn't feel like anyone was like pushing the subject too much or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, again, just goes to like its what you call it? It's just way of handling things in like such a realistic way.
Yeah, the character writing is like on point for them. But yeah, Alonzo, what about your moment that kind of sold you on the show?
It's super sappy, but it's literally the last shot of the season.
when the last shot sold you on the show, so you're just like forcing yourself to watch it, and then like the last shot is like, yeah,
no, this is it. No, it's just like it's super 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 sappy. It like at this point she's figured out that she likes him. He knows he likes her, but doesn't want to tell her. And she's like, I got really scared from watching the horror movies. Can you just stay on the phone with me? He falls asleep, and she's about to go to sleep. She's like, I really like you. And they just both go to sleep together on the phone. And it's just cute, okay? Like, it's my favorite part of the entire show. Like, it's not the best part of the entire show, but it's my favorite part.
Right, because and it leads perfectly into into season two. Because yeah, I think Gojo is like less obvious or oblivious of it,
yeah,
of his attraction to her. But she mm-hmm. comes out at the end of the first season as like, oh, I'm ready to say I love you, and it mm-hmm. does lead you into like the potential dynamics of like the next season. So yeah, it's perfectly well executed ending. And again, if it doesn't even continue, even though we know it's going to continue, it feels like a good ending for it as well. It's
yeah.
just like a short, sweet story of just people coming together with passion. So yeah, Sam, we need to talk about your number four, because we talked about our number four for long enough. So what was your number four?
So my number four is Summertime Rendering.
Oh, that is so much of a yeet, it hurts. No, I'm just joking. That's a yeet for me.
Okay.
That is a bench for me.
Wait, have you?
How could you?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, yeah, it's on Disney Plus, so it's not really accessible Disney to most Plus? People.
Yeah, Disney Plus Japan.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so.
Okay, I was like, what?
Yeah, that's higher on my list, Sam, so we'll get back to that.
Yeah,
I have a lot of things to say. So we only have one anime in common right now, so that's pretty exciting for our list.
I'm sad I don't get to watch this.
We all have Bisco on our list. Okay, so we have two all in common right now. All right, so into our top three spots. So Alonzo, back to you. What is your number three?
This technically came out this year. It's Demon Slayer.
Oh, the Entertainment District.
You're right,
it came out this year,
because I remember that like the first four episodes were basic, like it started airing earlier than the season, but that was because they were remaking the movie into four episodes, so it didn't technically start season two until everything else did, but it started with those first four episodes. But yeah, no, Demon Slayer is my number three.
All right, cool. Yeah, season two, Entertainment District. So that's a bench just by my rules. But Sam, it sounds like you.
I hate myself now, because like as I was saying, like when I was making my list, like it, just a little bit more accessibility, and like with Demon Slayer, because you would do this, you watch this in the movie, and even in this one, it's like. Even though like it's like has its own like subgenre like Bleach, like the Thousand Year War arc, you have to have that prior knowledge to keep watching, you know, to understand what's happening. But I would say like as opposed to Bleach, like with Demon Slayer, it's an easier time for you to pick up what's going on. And
okay, yeah, I mean, if you want to rewrite your list, but Alonzo, why? Okay, so you know, as you're talking about it, can you talk about if this is a better season than season one? Like, how do you feel about that as well?
Okay, so I'm actually going to... So, real quick. UFOtable came out of winter 2022. Mm-hmm. Crunchyroll, Funimation, Hulu. But I'm actually going to jump off of what Sam said with the, oh, it's not really accessible. I actually think it is extremely accessible for the fact that... They do a really good job of kind of summarizing like what's happened before, especially with the fact that they like included those first four episodes for the movie, right? Mm-hmm.
You're right. So you include that in
yes, the second season. Because it's part of the I'm pretty sure it's part of the second season. Along with that, like you get like a decent amount of flashbacks that like kind of give you context for what's happening, how demons work, and then like their motivations. You then have those first four episodes play it out, and now you're really invested, right? And then you go into the entertainment arc, and you know what's going on. You're literally you basically hit the ground running at that point, right? Mm-hmm. So it just does a really good job of like onboarding someone to the universe because of those first four episodes. Otherwise I would agree with you, like because there's just a lot of context that you're missing. It did a phenomenal job with animation, storytelling. I am anime only. I've been trying to read the manga, but I keep not finishing it, so I don't actually know what's coming. I had read through this part and that's it. And I was looking forward to it. And they did an even better job than I could have possibly imagined in animating it. Like, the fights were incredible. I, at one point, was so engrossed in, like, the fight and what was happening, I forgot what was going to happen. like I was like, what's happening next? I was like, wait, I know it's what's so happening beautiful. Next. It's yeah, so no, literally. Like, it was just so well done. So I'm looking forward to whenever season 3 comes out, and I can be blown away again. I know a lot of people have, like, criticisms towards it being, like, a pretty, like, run-of-the-mill, like, shonen. And it kind of is, honestly. But, like, they do... What they do really well is animation and fight scenes. And sometimes that's kind of all you need to carry a show. Where the story is passable, right? It's pretty, like, you kind of know where it's gonna go. There's not a lot of surprises aside from one early on in those first 4 episodes that I'm not gonna spoil to anyone who hasn't seen it. But yeah, like it just does a lot of a good job by conveying the or using that story as a vehicle for phenomenal animation.
I would say just one other thing in regards to the fights, too. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, Jay, if we've talked about this before, but regarding fight scenes, how there's the physical and there's also the emotional. So because the story is simple and some of the characters are a bit stereotypical, but like the way they do the stereotypes, they sort of hone in on that and you endear to them and even how they talk about the story or at least their backgrounds. So you're invested, and more specifically in this season, the story is more focused on a particular thing, whereas the first season you're going through various stories. So you're able to work with the characters that you have, and you're able to see a lot of parallels. And so you're able to see characters trying to overcome these parallels. Some of them are seeing the parallels, and other characters are trying to lead by previous characters' examples. And you get more emotionally invested in the fights. And because the fights are so well done, and because the emotional setup is there, the fights have a bigger payoff as well.
Right, yeah, because it's just well-structured from that kind of emotional and technical standpoint. So it's really hard to say if there's anything else in competition for best fight. So Crunchyroll has the awards that they'll do next year, but it's really hard to say that there's any competition versus... that happens in this season. And it does sound, Alonzo, that you said that this season is better than the first season, so I'm assuming that's a correct assumption to make. But yeah, it's very interesting that I think the most critiques that this season gets is just that it's just one big fight, and however you feel about that going into it is kind of the selling point is like there's not much story. It's more of a infiltration and discovering and tracking a certain demon. So we do have roughly 3 more seasons of Demon Slayer. We talked about this in length before, that the manga is pretty short. So it only has 2 more arcs after the Sword Smith arc, which comes out this winter, I believe. So we're only a few months away from it. So I believe that's right. But yeah, so very interesting choice, and I can't really dispute it as being one of the best of the year as well.
Like,
so,
damn, yeah. that's a good choice.
Yeah, that's a good pick. Yeah, so we're going to have to talk about that a little bit, because my number 3 is Cyberpunk Edgerunner.
Bro, that's a Kobe for me.
It's like yeet for me.
All right. Ooh. Cool. Nice. All right, so we'll get back to that, because there's plenty of things to say about that, because I know you've been playing the game, and I want to know if you only came back to play it because of the anime, so... Really Literally looking forward to that. Okay, yeah. Cool. So, yeah, really want to talk about that. But Sam, on to your number 3 then.
No, that's a Kobe for me. It's
oh, yeah, you did say that. Oh, my bad. Yeah. All right, awesome. So that is a punt sheet for Alonzo. But then back to Alonzo then. Your number 2.
Is Chainsaw Man.
Oh, okay. All right, so... Only 4 episodes out as of this recording, so you've been super impressed by the first 4.
Yes. So I think for both of you, then it's it was lower on your list, right?
Yeah, it was my number five. But yeah. What about you, Jay? Is it?
It's a bench. Assuming it's a bench because it's not finished, right?
Right. Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So it's my number two because I've read everything that's supposed to be like when the anime was announced. Everyone had talked about how Chainsaw Man had ended, and I was like, oh cool, I guess I'll just read the manga, finish the manga, and then the last page says end of arc, and I'm like, they lied to me, I've been lied to. Okay, fine, whatever, watch the anime. I have some criticisms regarding some of the animation, but like where it hits, like the fight scenes just hit so hard, and like every single background is phenomenally drawn. Like every like shot is just like if you just take a screenshot of anything in that show, it's gorgeous. It's just absolutely beautiful, right? And it seems as though episode per episode, they're actually getting better with the animation. Like my criticism that I had regarding like some of the CGI looking a little wonky, like with like just like the zombies walking, I was like, oh, that's a little off-putting. Almost gone by episode four, right? Like people are walking around and maybe it's just that I've gotten used to it, but it feels as though like they've gotten better with those tools that they had initially, and it's just they're just getting better progressively. And I think where most people are thinking this season's gonna end is gonna have a very phenomenal climactic finish that I'm just gonna enjoy a lot. But yeah, no, I'm extremely confident in, like, well, I mean, it's also just MAPPA. Like, they do great work. I can't think of a time that they've let me down so far. I'm sure it exists. I just don't want to think about it.
depending on how you feel about the Titans and Attack on Titan and their use of CGI, but I think that was more of a weeb criticism than an actual criticism.
I haven't actually watched
Okay. Oh yes. That's true. Okay, my bad. Yeah, then they have a clean record right now, but that's very
clean record.
So Sam, this is also on your number five, and I don't want to. I mean, I've been keeping up. Yes. I've watched every single episode, so I want to talk a little bit more details about like even the opening and like the certain powers that they show, not to spoil anything, but just how the world of devils work. So, but Sam, you're number five. Why is it so at the border of your list?
It's number five because of the animation that Alonzo had mentioned. It has gotten better, but there have been times when the wonkiness would come in and out. We saw a lot of it with the zombies, and even with Power and her background, it would sort of come in and out, but still, like, the reason why it is in my top five, and it's a little bit lower too because it hasn't finished, but it's there because I've read a little bit of this author's other works, like we've mentioned earlier in previous episodes with Fire Punch and even Goodbye Eri. I really like this character, this author, and how he writes his characters and the dynamic between Denji and Power and the samurai bro, I forgot his name. It's just very, very well done. And just saying what Alonzo was saying, how like a lot of the set pieces are very, very pretty. The episode where Power comes and moves in with them, we see Denji and samurai bro just having a regular morning, right? They're waking up, they're having breakfast. We see samurai bro sit and make coffee like a hipster he is. And
it's just a really good way of making coffee. Okay, pour over.
I'm sorry. My
he grinds. He grinds his own beans.
He grinds his own beans.
Oh, and his name is Aki, by the way.
Okay. So we see Aki grinding his beans as most hipsters do, trying to make the best coffee that they can. Sorry, but my point is, right, is like something that's very everyday. And I hate slice of life type stuff, but like in this scene, I'm not even mad. I'm like, okay, it's like that's a very good puree that he made with his beans. It's like, And, like, I like the steam coming up from the hot water as he's pouring in the beans, and he's going to sit and read the newspaper. It's like, okay, this is kind of interesting how it's all, like, drawn out. It's, I guess because everything else, like, it's just so high octane, and just to see them just beautifully animate a scene where everything's relaxed and, you know, they're sort of recovering and regrouping, it's just very, very well done. And as I said before, like, I just really love the dynamic between Aki, Power, and Denji. And I know that there is a big reveal with, I think her name's Makima, the redhead. Is that her name?
Yes.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
With, I know there is a big reveal with Makima, but I'm really interested to see what that's going to be. We see something with, well, not really see something, but I think, like, there have been hints given already just how she interacts with Denji and Aki. So I'm really interested to see where, you know, what's going to come from that. But yeah, that's why Chainsaw is where it is on my.
It's wild that, you know, well, just looking at it, we've only seen 4 episodes and it's so high on some people's list. So it's very interesting because I think we can talk a little bit at least about the first 3 episodes, because one, I think it passed the 3 episode test because it ends episode 3 with a bat devil. And the whole premise, like, Fujimoto is the writer or mangaka, and the premise is essentially of this is that devils are born into the world with a name. And so we get the bat devil, we get Denji as a chainsaw devil, and we get Power as a blood devil. So we get all these kind of ideas of fears in the human world. And it's such an interesting, I don't know if you want to call it a power system, Sam, but that the fear of a word or the fear of a thing is what gives these devils powers. And I think that's
I just wanted to jump off of that. It's similar to Jujutsu Kaisen, where as the spirits that they usually have to exercise or they have to fight, it's sort of like, you know, the more that you fear a thing, the stronger it is. And you get to see that a little bit in this world with a character that they talk about later on. You get to see that the reason why the character in Chainsaw Man I met was that you get to see, like, with just by hearing the character's name, it's like, okay, that's why that character is so strong, is because the name represents something and a lot of the fears that are behind it. So it's like that fear sort of fuels it. So that's sort of because Jujutsu Kaisen came out a little bit earlier, it sort of primed me to sort of understand a little bit how Chainsaw Man.
Gotcha. Yeah, because you can talk about, like, the small intricacies of it, and, like, Studio MAPPA is doing a good job. And I think what they're doing best is using rotoscoping, which throughout the past 2 years that we knew that Chainsaw Man was coming out, like, they were talking about the unfair work environment of MAPPA Studios and how much they were putting their animators through, like, the grind of, like, certain work hours and, like, overtaxing them. So it definitely shows, and I think that's something that, you know, you pointed out, Alonzo, is that it got progressively better. And I think that's one of those reasons, like, yeah, they saw episode 1, it's like, oh, it's not going to cut it, my guys, work for another 50 hours this week. So it's very wild that, and we talked a little bit about the opening. Oh, Lonzo, since you're here, did you catch all the movie references in the opening to Chosen?
I in fact did watch Mother's Basement 37 minute video on the opening.
Okay, you got the breakdown.
So the ones that I missed, I found out about, and I was shocked at how many there were.
Right, yeah, and I talked a little bit about it before, but I only caught the Big Lebowski one because that's a really notable scene of them rubbing the balls and the little wipes. But yeah, it's a wild opening. And also, I mentioned that all the endings are unique per episode, so there's technically.
Yeah.
That is true. I completely forgot about that.
And I think they're doing it all in studio. I can't remember if there's a different studio in charge of them, but they're changing up the art style. I think episode 4, they're like doing crayons or water paints. Yeah, it's very interesting. Or pastels. Pastels is what I'm thinking about. Yeah. But yeah, it's a wildly good show right now. So we'll come back and see if it's going to be best of the year after a couple more episodes. But
how I'm sorry, I just want to gush real quick. It's like, how insane was it that the first bad guy that Denji got to fight as Chainsaw Man was the zombie devil?
Oh yeah, I forgot the zombie devil. That was so quick. Oh, you mean like a Romero kind of parallel?
I think so, but like it was just like it was just very, very, because like the only time that like you would ever see like somebody use a chainsaw to like really fight anybody, I guess, like aside from, well, like you can even make an argument like in Tucker and Dale versus Evil, but like it's just like any other time that you see anybody use a chainsaw to like really fight anybody, I guess, like outside of Warhammer, right, is like it's during like a zombie horde. So like it's just befitting that like the very first boss or the very first enemy that Denji gets to fight is a horde of zombies,
right? Because it's a reference to Evil Dead or Night of the Living Dead, but those early horror movies where you're like, ah, that's where the chainsaw comes from. But yeah, it's like, I know, Alonzo, you know the answer, but I'm suspecting that Makima is like an angel, because there's an angel character that they show in the opening. Like, they have a halo and wings, and I was like, oh, that would be cool if the person in charge of a bunch of devil hunters is an angel, but I don't want you to spoil anything, so that's just my speculation, which I'm
going to just going to say, picture River Song saying spoilers, and that would be my answer.
But yeah, it's just like how she carries herself is very otherworldly, so I just wonder how deep they're going to go into the devil angels and others, like the supernatural leviathans. Like, how big is this world? Because they're really concentrating in these first episodes, like how small the world is, and it's just going to blow up from there. But sorry, we're talking too much about Chainsaw Man. But Sam, getting on to your number two, what is your number two?
Spy Family.
Yo,
so okay. Dang, okay. I am honestly surprised, because you literally, in this last discussion, you just said how much you hate Slice of Life.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh my goodness. Jay, was that a Kobe for you or no?
That's lower on my list. That's my number nine. Alonzo's number five, and you're number two. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's another commonality that we have. So, we're going to have a couple of commonalities in our top five. So, cool. Yes. So, why is it so high for you above Edge Runners, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that again, I'm surprised.
Yeah, I'm the Mecha Tech guy, and I hate Slice of Life, but I put Spy Family over.
I would say probably Spy Family is more or less like my guilty pleasure comedy anime, and it's just like in terms of accessibility, like definitely is good for somebody who is new to the anime scene. Like, it's just anime enough without being, what's the word?
Stereotypical cringy stuff.
Yeah, yeah, without being cringy, right? Without being off-putting, right? And it comes off as cutesy without playing into, like, the moe aspect. Like I said, it's more or less, like, along the lines of comedy. And the comedy beats, they're very well done. The animation is great as well. The characters are pretty solid, even though like they start out very superficial. I would say it's just very, very brilliant how a lot of the time that we see everything through Anya's eyes, like it sort of makes sense. Like, if you want your audience to keep coming back, it's like you show them through the eyes of a kid who knows everything and tries to solve everything as a kid would. And she's not annoying. She is very endearing as a child character. And, like, they don't really get super political, even though, like, it is based around politics. So, like, it doesn't bog you down with the, like, it's just real enough so that you can understand what's at stake. And it doesn't, necessarily bog you down with, techno babbles, like this prime minister doing X, Y, and Z, things like that. And I would say, like, also, like, in term, I did read a little bit of the story. I hadn't finished reading it, but they do go into the character's backstory to where you can, where they are more three-dimensional. So it's very light, very digestible, and the comedy, oh, it's so good. It's, I would say, because I know, Jay, you really, the way that you've mentioned, like, some of, like, light stuff, you sort of consider it, like, comfort food. But I would say that, like, Spy Family is probably gourmet comfort food. I'm trying to think of, like...
all right, so, Alonzo, you have it as your fifth or your number five spot. So what do you like about it so much?
Honestly, it's a lot of what Sam said, right? It's easily digestible, which, like, can sound like a bad thing, but sometimes you want just something that you can just sit down and not think too hard about, right? Any questions you generally have about what's happening kind of get answered pretty quickly. It's a giant ball of dramatic irony, right? That's the one where, like, the audience knows something that the characters don't. But that we're in with the joke with Anya because she knows the truth, but the two parents don't. And that's just, it's funny. But it's also just wholesome. Like, they're, one of the endings, was just them having dinner, like setting up plates and sitting around, like, the table eating. And I just watched the whole ending because it's just, it's wholesome. It makes your heart melt a little bit in these trying times, you know, like it's just good fun.
All right, cool. Yeah. And I have it in my nine spots. And again, I concur with everything you guys just said. And it's more of like, I put in the category of comedy of errors and why I wrote off the Yakuza's Guide to Babysitting, because it feels very comfortive food around like a family that's very wholesome. And there's the element of danger behind actions going on in the world. So I was like, it's too similar for me that it's like I have to eliminate one. So Spy Family kept, but yeah, it's just a interesting dynamic and the twist of like superpowers, and kind of they approach it not too deeply into why it's possible that there is an Esper in the world, as well as not too much of a spoiler, but there is a dog that can predict the future. I don't think that's much of a spoiler, but it is a interesting dynamic that kind of makes Anya overpowered as well, because
she can go into that further in the show. Just FYI, just everything will be explained.
Gotcha. So yeah, it's just a very small, digestible is the word you guys used a lot, story. And even you're as a assassin, you don't see her assassinating. So it's like you saw her do it once and she hasn't done it since. And the more of the comedy comes from just how inept she is as a person. Like, she's highly proficient as a assassin, but she's inept as a person.
Her brother, man. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yuri is a very interesting side character. But, yeah, even the side cast, like the handler being named like the Steel Lady or the Full Metal Lady, the Frankie, the assistant to Lloyd. But, yeah, it all stems from, like, a very real concern. And, like, the politics you said gets glossed over, but just the concern of, you know, pre-World War One Europe, I guess?
Yeah.
Or is the parallel supposed like, to be...
It's more like the Berlin Wall. I mean, like, it's literally Berlin.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, they do touch on it enough to know that you're set in the real world, just these small supernatural tweaks on this few things. But yeah, it is a comedy of error around the world through a child's eyes. So it's nice. I put it, you know, on my number nine, so it did make the list, but, you know, it's nothing too extraordinary. I'm not going to remember 2022 for the year of Spy Family came out, unfortunately. But yeah, my number two is a yeet from earlier, Alonzo, is Recoil.
I just call it Licorice because I think that's what they said in the show, right?
They do, Licorice. Yeah, so, and I think that's a bench for you, Sam, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I know Alonzo's number one. I don't think your number one is on our list, Sam, unless I'm overlooking something. I hope it's not.
My number one is
but we'll talk about, okay. Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
All right, okay, so we'll talk about Licorice, and then we can talk about Sam's.
Yeah. But we'll go to your number one in a bit. But yeah, my number two is on your list, Alonzo, because, bruh, I am so wildly captivated by the world that this happens in. And someone said it's like if John Wick trained a bunch of girls
Yes!
And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But it's more like the Dark Horse comic wanted more than anything, because these girls be doing some superhuman feats.
Okay, and mostly Chisato. Okay, mostly Chisato, because she is literally the John Wick of this universe.
Yeah,
right.
But it is a wild story of these girls have been militarized as a assassination or a terrorist control unit. And when I first heard the premise, I was like, oh, it's going to be that. It's going to be like, oh, cute girls doing airsoft or cute girls doing cute girls doing paintball. But no, they just straight up murk people in this, this whole anime.
Literally, first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like literally first 5 minutes. Let me just paint the picture for you. It's a narration of, we haven't had crime in Japan in like 10 years, blah, 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 blah. As you see like a dude like prepping a bomb to blow up like a bus station, and you just see two girls kind of walk by, silencers take one out as like a person walks past the camera and then he's gone. Like full on like operations to stop crime before it happens. Like,
damn. So it, like, they're like Minority Report, except like they
without
don't...
futuring. Yeah, no, they're just using data around like information gathering and stuff throughout Japan to prevent crime, and using and their argument is, I'm sorry that I cut you off. Their argument for using high school girls is that they're the least likely to be like suspicious.
Yeah, again, like the deception of the whole cute girl doing cute thing is like they're probably like the people you least suspect, and that's kind of based in the history of assassins. You always give assassination missions to children. Like, you wouldn't expect a child to walk up with you with a suicide bomber's vest or, you know, slip something into your drink. So, like, there is a very realistic approach other than just high school stories with some incredible thing like, oh, yeah, these girls can drive a tank and, like, girls in Panzer. But, yeah, it's a completely realistic story in the sense of, like, counterintelligence. They give enough details into why the premise works, and that the world feels very much like that anime. Oh, Great Pretender. Great Pretender, of this incredible, diverse cast with different motivations, different understanding, conflicted over rough moralities, as well as this very intricate backstory for the villains, or, you know, at least the antagonists of the series, as well as all the gunplay in it is so well choreographed. Mm-hmm. There's this scene on a train platform and just girls getting ambushed and then turning the tables on the, you know, antagonists, and then bombs going off. It is not child friendly at all. It's done by A1 Pictures. So you kind of think that it's going to be cutesy, but the cute design kind of subverts your expectations, because, again, the whole idea of, you wouldn't expect a girl to stab you in the neck and then have your body carted away. And it's so surprising because everything is so well choreographed as well. Because there's like a scene where someone's crossing a crosswalk and they're being tracked. And because the person that's following them is being tracked, they arrange a car to hit them. So it's just like all fun assassinations, all these fun kills, all these fun coordinated efforts of seeing so many steps ahead, and the whole morality of how far can counterintelligence go into people's personal lives, and what does it take to actually build those kind of people that are able to do that. Sorry, I'm talking way too long about this, but it is wildly underappreciated, I think.
I agree with you 100%, and I think that's something else that, like, I think we kind of both, like, ignored a little bit. The main character uses non-lethal rounds, which I think is like a big thing for the series. The most talented person in their world
is holding,
doesn't back. Use live rounds. Yeah, it's a pass. It doesn't want to kill anyone. Actively seeks to help the people she just stopped because they're also living people, right? And yeah, just like, I don't know, like, it's interesting. That's kind of like what, like, drew me in the most personally, was that, oh, we're going with like a Kenshi kind of idea, right? Like, we're not gonna kill as long as we don't have to. Cool. Yeah, no, agreed. Totally underrated show. Definitely check it out. John Wick with Girls.
Yeah, John Wick with Girls or Want It, yeah, for sure. All right, so that's my number two. So, Alonzo, we're back to your number one, which should be Cyberpunk Edgerunner.
It is. Do we want to come back to mine since Sam's isn't on either one of ours?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, Sam, your number one surprise bench from, I think, both of us. What was it?
It is Spriggan.
Knew it. Yes, Spriggan. yeah. Of course. And yeah, that's nowhere on both of our lists. And my number one is, by process of elimination, Summertime Render.
So we all have three. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this we're going to be fun. All right, so okay. Yeah, let's go to Cyberpunk since that's on all three of our lists. So, Alonzo, you're number one.
Yeah, my number one. So, only available on Netflix. Came out last season, right?
Yes, yeah.
I did everything in my power to not watch this show. I did not want to watch it because I knew the moment, because like I saw all these videos about how good it is, like without like spoiling anything, they were like, this show is amazing, top notch, phenomenal. I'm like, it's gonna make you cry. I'm like, damn, no, there's no way, because I was like, if it's that good, I'm gonna probably want to play Cyberpunk 2077. I can't do it. Don't watch it. Then one day, like, my friend was talking about it. I was like, yeah, no, it's, like, really, really sad. I was like, okay, I guess I'll watch it. I don't know. I felt like watching
something sad. Wow. You binged it. You just wanted to feel hurt.
I did. No, yeah. No, I did. I was just like, man, you know what? I really want to just, like, feel sad. And man, it did. It made me feel sad. And I immediately downloaded 2077. Because I think one thing that the show does really, really well, aside from its animation, is the storytelling and world building. Like, at this point, when I first started watching it, I actually had never played a cyberpunk game before, or even knew anything about the universe. I know the general genre and idea of it, but I like this universe specifically, I had no clue about, and it just made me want to know more. And I think a testament to like how good this show was is I personally thought it was great. Its ending, like, it doesn't need more. It ended in a way where you don't need more. It's a it's its own story, right?
Yeah.
And apparently people were pissed that it doesn't get a season two. And I'm like, yeah. How do you do a season two? Like, you just can't. Like, not with, like, you can't just do the same characters. You could maybe do a different time in the same world, but it just, like, it wouldn't be Edgerunners, it would be something else, right? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's great. I can't. Story, like, character building is I'm sorry, I gush a lot about the show. I can't really articulate words right now. Please take over.
Jay, you've played the game and we've talked about it. We've had hyped it up before it came out. And I'm trying to remember where it was on your list. It was your number three along with me. It was in our same spot. So why is it so low on your list?
Well, I mean, it's really high on my list.
Yeah, it's
really interesting.
It's pretty high, but like, why is it where it is?
Yeah, because it is heartbreaking, the ending, and I just want to have a good time. I don't see myself really revisiting Edgerunners. But yeah. I do want to say this: is that I never thought that Studio Trigger was going to outdo what I think is their best anime, which is Space Patrol Luluco. But I think this just becomes this is easily my top spot for Studio Trigger because it feels like the perfect mesh of material and their style, the over exaggeration and how they draw their scenes as well as their character design. And there's so much to love about it, to speak about, well, one around the hype about 2077 is that I was in the camp of it, watching it for like the past 7 years of whenever it was announced back in like 2009 or 2011. It was like when we were at university is when they first premiered the E3 trailer for it. So I was really hyped for the game. Game really disappointed. You know, that's not really something new, but there is a lot to love about them separately, and you can see even with the wave of the wave that the anime caused, because I think, as I remember, a game reporter reported on this, is like they were around like 10,000 or 15,000 players per day before Edgerunner came out. And then after Edgerunner, it jumped up to like a million daily users because they integrated a lot of updates around the anime into the game, because they did like a lot of interviews of showing that the game developers were in the loop with the anime and its development. And I love that they give, you know, proper credit to Michael Pondsmith, who made the board game that's based off of, or the top of, tabletop game. But about the anime itself, God, I was not expecting it to be that gory. Man, I was like blown away at how dark it gets. And that's kind of the point of Night City. Again, talking about how it is in the tabletop, the game, and then in the anime. It's like, it's not a redemptive story. It's about getting out alive and getting what's yours. It's not a hero's journey. And I think that's kind of what people are mad at, is that, Martinez or David, you think he's a good guy, but he's not. Everyone's coded with a certain level of gray. And that's what cyberpunk stories really do well. It's like, if you're talking about Blade Runner or even Judge Dredd, everyone's dark in their own specific way. And you can't really judge anyone against anyone else. Everyone's a bad guy to someone else. It's so hard. Sorry, I don't want to talk about the ending too much, but it has this perfect arc from start to finish that you can't, you just have to cry and applaud at the end when you know what happens. There are so many spoilers on YouTube. So I was watching it, like binging it, but I knew how it was going to end, and I was like, oh man, that kind of sucks. But it is a thing of attention to detail to cyberpunk themes and tropes that play out. They're basically a Suicide Squad kind of story, and you kind of have to go with it. You kind of have to accept that not everyone is a good guy. Everyone is a particular shade of, you know, villainy to someone else. There are bad guys, of course, and there are good guys, and good guys usually get filled with bullets, but or collateral damage. But it is such a wild ride for a cyberpunk story to go in that direction and say, oh yeah, we're just going to do one and done. We're going with Studio Trigger that never does sequels or, you know, follow-up seasons. But yeah, it is an incredible journey. And I think it's best of the year. Even though it's not my number one, I think it is the best anime of the year. So, Sam, you put it behind Spy Family. So why is that?
Yes. Because of how sad it is.
Okay. All right.
But no. Let me finish. Okay. You guys got to speak. It's my turn. So, for the longest, and I had told Jay this too, it's like as I'm watching it and I'm seeing the parallels between certain characters, and at a certain point, I'm like, no, I'm not going to watch this, because it felt very Shakespearean, where a lot of some characters were. What's the phrase? We're cautionary tales to other characters, right? And it causes a sense of dread to me, where it's like, kid or people, do you not realize what's happening? And you're on that same or similar trajectory. Do something about it. And so I decided to opt out and not finish it. And then after talking to Jay about it, I'm like, you know what, let me just go ahead and finish watching it. And I remember I messaged Jay, it's like, I am feeling feelings right now, and I blame you for it. And it was funny too, because before I had finished it, Jay had asked me in regards to any Latin coding that was sort of done with David's character, and Alonso, you can correct me if I'm wrong in this, but what I had mentioned before finishing it is like a lot of people who grew up with like the first generation immigrants, right? They have that sense of that sense of guilt where it's like your parents did X, Y, and Z to give you this opportunity, so you have to do your best to live out the dreams that they have set, that they have for you. And as you're watching it, you get to see, or as I was watching it, like, you literally have David mention a line where he feels like he has to carry on the dream of his mother and Maine, which was a character that was earlier in the series. And this was after I had mentioned that to you earlier, Jay. So, like, the fact that they had brought that in, like, I didn't realize that they had done that. So, like, you definitely do get a little bit of that taste of that, that first generation or that second generation immigrant mentality of, you know, trying to live up to the expectations that your predecessors have for you, or they have instilled in you, and, you know, saying, it's like, oh, you have this much potential to do X, Y, and Z. And you get to see where his character comes to a conclusion from that.
So I think something that we're kind of glossing over is one of the main themes of the show. And I think they did really well. And you actually hit on this a little bit, Sam, was the whole, like, half versus half nots, and how the whole world is built around, like, corporations that kind of run everything. And then I was like, oh, this feels really familiar for some reason. Huh. It's like one medical bill can just screw your entire life over. Oh, you don't have enough to pay? You kind of have to die. You don't have enough money for the funeral? Here's some cremation. Like, it hit really close home for being 50 years out. And not to, like, for a bit of a hint, in Cyberpunk 2077, you do a flashback to 50 years back, so our current time, and it's the same thing. And I'm just like, oh, I guess they were just predicting the future, I guess.
All right, cool. So that was Cyberpunk. Probably, I mean, I would estimate that it gets nominated for the Crunchyroll's Best Anime of the Year award. Not sure if it's going to win, but it's definitely a high contender after, you know, we have all the fall anime that premiered this season to compete against. But all right, so going on to my number one, which was Summertime Render, which is 25 episodes done by OLM Studio, which is responsible for Komi-san, as well as a bunch of Pokemon movies and other things. And it's on Disney Plus Japan. And Sam, you had it as your number four.
Number four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the wild thing about this is it's a time loop story. So again, that's right off the premise, but the thing that really sells the series for me is how horrific it is. And I'm really not always akin to that, but it goes into the kind of direction of, I would say, like, Primer, and how it uses time travel, or at least how it uses looping or, you know, branch timelines. It's not the Steins Gate kind of way, but in the horrific elements of what's actually going on behind the scenes of why the time loop happens is so, like, the monster design of the creatures responsible, I'm sorry, I'm trying to talk around this, but the people responsible, the creatures behind it, is kind of wild and supernatural, and it's such a grounded story because it comes down to, oh, you know what it feels like? It feels like Butterfly Effect with Ashton Kutcher, like, from like 30 years or 25 years ago. It's like, you see that the trauma that goes on to repeating, and where the stakes of a time looping story that's going on does set into the main character, and like, okay, who cares? It's just Groundhog Day. He's going to just keep repeating the day. Nothing's really going to be consequential. But no, the whole heft of the story takes place after the time loop gets solved, and there's so much depth to it. It goes back into, like, Japanese history. It talks about, it's very much a tourism kind of anime where it's set in a real location and the history of the island and its people and religion, as well as mixing these sci-fi elements into it, into the supernatural. And it really bogs down to, like, the ending. Again, I'm sorry to have to talk about anime that really sells you on this ending, but it stems from a lot of the interpersonal dramas of people's lives, and, like, the groundhog ways of exploring people's lives and what have they been doing in the meantime of distant friends and families, and is the world worth saving, or is your like small piece of the world worth saving? It's like how you value people in your lives, and it's just all wrapped up so perfectly well together, because every action has a consequence, even though it's in a time loop, and everything does matter because you feel like they are iterations happening in congruency with each other or sequence with each other. And then the characters are fun. They have good sense of humor and action and horror. It just mixes all these genres together, and it's really hard to explain it. It just tackles everything so well. It's just not one piece. It just works together as a jigsaw puzzle. And it is a mystery, so you do have a mystery box going on in the time loop as well as outside the time loop. So it's an incredible story in that regard. All right. So, well, something on good news side, you can talk about Springen, which was a bench from both of us, but I believe this was on Netflix, and it kind of went under the radar because it came out kind of between seasons, and it came out on Netflix because we talked about it as a news story, is that Netflix didn't really care at all about the anime broadcast schedule. So both Edgerunner and Springen came out of out of sequence of the other anime. So how is Springen your number one?
Oh my goodness, Springen. It's amazing. It's great. And oh my goodness, like as you said, Netflix is where it's streamed, and it is also done by David Production Studios. We follow this kid. He wears this exosuit that basically gives him superhuman strength, and he operates like a ninja, running into mercenary groups who are going after the same thing. So it feels an amalgamation like Alonzo, if you remember, it feels a little bit like Read or Die with Indiana Jones, if the main character was Sonic and he was actually pretty good in high school, right? he's not dumb.
Because Sonic's not dumb.
Or at least like he's a lot more studious than when he leads on, right? So okay. Like we literally it's funny because he's fighting up against Batty, who is a cyborg, and he's basically the person that he's fighting uses sound, and he being the main character uses the Doppler effect in order to subdue the enemy from what he learned in physics earlier that day. And that's one thing that they really do well in this series as well, is that in this show, the reason why he does what he does is because he wants to live as much of a normal high school life as he can. And in order to do that, he wants to ensure that all these artifacts that are type 1 civilization, you know, that they are locked away like they should be. And they do a really good balance because of like his high school life and his espionage life. So I guess a little bit like Totally Spies as well, if you guys remember that show, where he tries to compete in the school physical fitness test where his class has to compete against other classes. And he's out on a mission and he's trying to beat the baddie or solve the puzzle so that he can get back and help his team win the day. And it's very fun, very well done. And as he's going through each mission, you realize what's at stake, and the stakes are slowly raised ever so slightly, and you run into some of his other teammates, and one of them is really, really cool. He is a werewolf, but the way that he transforms, or the conditions needed for him to transform, are very... It's interesting. Not like anime wacky interesting, but it's sort of like, okay, that's an interesting trigger type of interesting. And just like his personality and the way that they banter back and forth, it's very, very good. And so you get to you get to like this guy before you even realize that he has something special about him. And he also has this one sort of foil that he always runs into on his missions, this sort of treasure hunter that's a high school age as well, that is sort of an information broker that's trying to get the artifacts as well. As I said, it's a really fun time. So it's sort of like that mix of good story, that digestibility, as well as you know, being short while having enough content to being full without feeling stuffed. So that's sort of why Spriggan is where it is. And as I said before, like, the animation, it's great, and the fight scenes are amazing, and I can't suggest it more than enough, and I feel like I've taken up my time.
All right, so that is our individual list for our top 10 anime of 2022. So we're going to combine our list, but first we're going to go, Alonzo, can you give us your top 10?
All right, number 10, The Yakuza's Guide to Babysitting. Number 9, Mob Psycho 100. Number 8, Sabikui Bisco. Number 7, Licorice Recoil. Number 6, Ya Boy Kong Ming. Number 5, Spy Family. Number 4, My Dress Up Darling. Number 3, Demon Slayer. Number 2, Chainsaw Man. And number 1, Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
Awesome. So my number 10, or my top 10 from the year, is Uncle from Another World. Number 9, Spy Family. Number 8, Awashi. Number 7, Saibisky Bisco. Number 6, Aharisad is Indescribable. Number 5, I'm Quitting Heroing. Number 4, Dress Up Darling. Number 3, Cyberpunk Edgerunner. Number 2, Licorice, Licorice Recoil. Number 1, Summertime Render. And Sam, your top 10.
Sam's top 10 are as follows. Executioner and Her Way of Life, that's my number 10. Number 9, Tokyo 24th Ward. Number 8, Futo P.I. or Futo Tente. Number 7, Sapukui Bisco. Number 6, My Dress Up Darling. Number 5, Chainsaw Man. Number 4, Summertime Rendering. Number 3, Cyberpunk Edgerunner. Number 2, Spy Family. And number 1, Spriggan.
Awesome. So, after immense calculations, I have a final list for the year. So each of us have, okay, so Alonzo, you have 8 that made the final list. Sam, you have 7, and I have 6. So I thought that was a fair split up between our commonalities, because we had Saibisky Bisco in common, we have Spy Family in common, and Dress Up Darling in common. But some of yours, like Spriggan, since that was your number one, Sam, but we didn't have it on our list. But yeah, so for the top 10 anime for 2022, our combined list goes 10, Ya Boy Kong Min. Number 9, Demon Slayer Entertainment District. Number 8, Licorice Recoil. Number 7, Saibisky Bisco. Number 6, Spriggan. Number 5, Spy Family. Number 4, Chainsaw Man. Number 3, Summertime Render. Number 2, Dress Up Darling, or My Dress Up Darling. And number 1, Cyberpunk Edgerunner. All right, so that's our list. Any honorable mentions, guys? Because I had Ya Boy Kong Min and Executioner and Her Way of Life. I also had Tamagotchi Game, which I didn't finish, but I really love the main character in that. Love After World Domination, which kind of took up, was kind of competing in my mind for My Dress Up Darling as kind of a superhero Power Ranger love story between, you know, the villains and a Power Ranger. Birdie Wing, which was Mappa's anime that year, which was competing against my other sports anime, so I had to pick between my babies. And Orbital Children, which I don't think anyone knows about because it was another quiet Netflix release.
So sorry, I had watched Orbital Children. That was a fun watch, but that definitely does bear mentioning, like you said.
Honorable of me would be The Devil is a Part-Timer season 2.
Yeah.
It was pretty good, but I don't think it captures the same, like, I don't know, it hits different than it did back in the day. I love the first season, second season not as much. I'm still enjoying it, still good, but it's just not it's the not same
as novel.
Yeah, I don't know. It maybe it's just the fact that it was like 13 years later. I don't know. And then Kaguya-sama, only because I haven't actually seen the all of season 3 yet.
All right, cool. Sam, any honorable mentions?
We've talked a little bit about them earlier. Bleach, of course, some big Bleach head, and I'm excited for the Thousand Year War arc, and every episode has been great. It has, like, at least, like, animation, it's been top tier. You mentioned this in passing, Jay, but Blue Lock, I was thinking about it, but putting it on the list, but a little bit because we haven't had as much episodes on it, but like they go, as you had stated earlier, they focus a lot on the ego. And so it feels, if you had watched the documentary on Netflix, The Redeem Team, in regards to basketball, it sort of feels a little bit like that. Like when you have like a coach trying to cultivate a team, or in this case, cultivate a specific player. So it's really, really heavy in shop talk in regards to soccer. So if you're not into soccer, it may not be your thing. Witch from the Gundam's show, The Witch from Mercury, that's also an honorable mention. It's good so far. It didn't have the same impact as Gundam's Iron Blooded Orphans. If it did, it would have made my list, but it still is pretty interesting, and it's been pretty good so far. It definitely deserves a watch. But those are the shows that I have in my honorable mentions that weren't mentioned earlier. So,
all right, so now we have some, it's not even a promotional, but we're going to close off the episode. We usually have like a happy holidays, happy New Year's, happy Christmas kind of thing, but now we thought to we'll change it up. So we have some 1980s commercials from KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, to go over, and we thought it would be at least a cool idea to talk about that in the languages that we speak. So we go through English first, then Spanish, then Mongolian, then Japanese, close off with Japanese since that's what the original performance is in. So Sam, can you start us off with English, then we go to Alonzo for Spanish, then me for Mongolian, and then back to Sam for Japanese. So, and how does it go, Sam?
Kentucky Fried Chicken's family pack is now available with 3 portions of homemade style soup. 3 portions for growing boys and girls, still just 1,500 yen. Kentucky Fried Chicken is the way to go.
El family pack de KFC, ahora disponible con 3 porciones de sopa al estilo de casa, perfecto para niños y niñas en crecimiento, todavía solo 1,500 yenes. Kentucky Fried Chicken es la forma de ir.
Gebus hol in goro ban kodich sulte idik udin goro hos miyong tavzo yopong mong in boso KFC mongoshyom.
Kentucky no family, paku no ni kuwaite, jikase sitaru no sopo ga sanri mai de rio dekeru I ni narimashita. Seicho no otoko no wa sanri mai de sen gyakuen. Kentucky Fried Chicken desu.